Warning: The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage. This is an encore presentation of The Savage Nation.
You're listening to the Memorial Day special on The Savage Nation, where we salute the troops 24-7. God bless the American military. The Pope is demanding the redistribution of wealth yet again. Again, the Pope is demanding the redistribution of wealth to help curb the so-called economy of exclusion. The Pope, who was the first non-European Pope in 1,400 years, who came from the socialist/Marxist era in his home country, is now lashing out at those of us who work for a living, telling us that he wants to redistribute our wealth. In other words, once again, he's talking about worldwide ethical mobilization. He's talking about solidarity with the poor in a new spirit of generosity. Well, I have a suggestion, Mr. Pope. I am offering $1 million right now, $1 million U.S. for the Sistine Chapel ceiling as the opening bid. Now, I'm sure that the Sultan of Brunei will top my bid. I'm sure that Soros will top my bid, and I'm sure that Geffen will top my bid. But to show you that I'm interested in redistributing the wealth, we should begin with the Vatican. And I think that the Sistine Chapel ceiling is a good place to begin. Since I've always admired the work of the Sistine Chapel ceiling, I've always enjoyed Michelangelo's paintings and art books, I would love to own some artworks by Raphael, Botticelli, and, of course, Leonardo da Vinci's Mona Lisa. I can't get that. I certainly can't get my hands on Da Vinci's Mona Lisa, but I could get the ceiling decoration in the Sistine Chapel for $1 million, couldn't I? I realize some may outbid me, but I've always wanted it. I'd rather have it in my own house. I don't have a house to fit it yet. And in fact, Mr. Pope, for that $1 million for the Sistine Chapel ceiling, the reason I'm offering that money to the Pope and the Vatican is so they can redistribute the wealth that begins in the Vatican itself. Because, after all, the poor are not doing well in the world, and someone has to help them. It's true I pay 39.7% federal tax. I pay 13% state tax in California. I pay various local taxes. But that's not enough for the Pope or Obama or the other Marxists on the planet. So I think that we need to redistribute the wealth, starting where the wealth actually resides, which would be in the wealthy places. And I think that we need to start by opening the bid today at $1 million. I think that's a good start. I really do. Have you ever wondered how wealthy the Catholic Church really is? Well, there's actually an answer to that. See, the Vatican has billions in shares of the most powerful international corporations: Gulf Oil, Shell, General Motors, Bethlehem Steel, General Electric, you name it. There's also great real estate owned by the Catholic Church. And I say there's nothing wrong with it. I mean, the Vatican's vast treasures of gold, real estate, and art, probably worth billions of dollars, and I believe that these gold ingots alone could be sold out to the world and redistributed to the poor of the world. You realize the Pope is not above criticism. I mean, do you believe that I'm wrong for criticizing the Pope in his demands for redistributing wealth? All right. I mean, am I being sacrilegious here? Are we now have to shut our mouths? I mean, if we criticize socialists in government, why can't we criticize socialists in the church? We live in a free market society, don't we? Every day we bellyache about Obama's tax grabs and regulations and power madness and the fear of worldwide communism encroaching upon us. So why should we say that a religious personality is above it? I don't understand it. Now, many Catholics listening to the show are conflicted right now because their church has been taken over by a diehard income redistributionist, and you can call it anything you want. Is Karl Marx in a papal outfit? That's what it is. I know that you don't want to hear this and you find it offensive. I get it. But it's only one man's opinion. I have no power. After all, I don't have power lunches. I eat out of a paper box for lunch. I don't have power friends. My only friend is my dog. But it's one man's opinion looking at the world from my perspective. Something's very, very dangerous Something dangerous is raging through the world. We criticize radical Islam on a regular basis, don't we? We talk about Boko Haram for months now. We talk about how violent they are towards Christians. We try to defend the poor innocent Christians around the world as best we can by talking about it. And then we wake up to find out that the Catholic Church itself is now going after those of us who actually work for a living, saying we're not paying enough in taxes. I don't quite understand how you can sit idly by and listen to this. You know, if I've criticized religious fanaticism before, which I have done so, whether it be Muslim religious fanaticism, in the form, for example, in the flavor of the day is the Boko Haram in Nigeria, or the Al-Qaedaists, or whoever they may be. I've criticized Orthodox Judaism for the form of circumcision they practice. I don't want to repeat it because it got me in a lot of hot water, but I'll do it again if you want. You know, I'm not talking about circumcision in general. That's a generic topic. I'm talking about the practice of the practices practiced by religious Jews that disgust me, to be honest with you. Got me sick. I took a lot of heat for this. A lot of them don't talk to me anymore. A lot of them say, you're wrong. Well, it's not in the Bible what they do. It made me ill. So now I say, wait a minute, I wake up now, the Catholics are doing it? Where does this leave me? I mean, like, my body was full of aches and pains today, waking up with aches and pains. I tried prayer, and that didn't work, so I went and got an aspirin, and it seems to be working right now. Maybe that's where it's leading. You know what I'm saying to you? In other words, I said, hey, God, would you take away the aches and pains, and my feet are hurting me, my arms are hurting me, my neck is hurting me. It was damp last night. I slept with the door open on the bay. And I said, hey, could you take it away? Didn't work, so I tried a Bayer, a 3 1/4. Already I feel it affecting me 15 minutes later. It wasn't prayer that worked. That aspirin sure circulating pretty quickly. So maybe I'm going to become an ultimate cynic. I was talking with the young guys who run my show in Dallas on the Savage Nation this morning about God, that they believe in God. I won't give you their beliefs because that's for them to do. And they said, well, hey, Mike, Savage, why don't you tell us what... I said, well, when I was a little kid in the Bronx, in New York, I was afraid of God. And I think I know what God looked like. They said, really? How'd you see God? I said, well, I'm not Jimmy Carter. He didn't come to me in a white robe in my living room because I didn't drink. My mother didn't serve me strychnine soup, you know. We didn't drink little bottles of strychnine and do dances with snakes to see God. So what do you think God looked like? Well, I thought God, I really swear to God, there was a big telephone book in New York. And, you know, 6 million people, whatever it was. That phone book was big. I got to tell you, it was so big. And on the cover of that phone book was a weird figure that, I don't know who it was mythologically, maybe one of my listeners can help me. There was a character that was painted, a painting on the phone book, of like a character with snakes in his arms. I was so afraid of that phone book, I wouldn't even look up a number. I would not even look up a phone number for fear that I'd offend God, because I thought that the guy in the front of that phone book was God. I think my mother told me the myth. She said, if you don't drink your milk, God's going to punish you. And I said, who's God? She said, him, that one, that guy on the phone book. That's who God is. So I had an inordinate fear of telephone books as a child. No, and it did get me in trouble later on. I think God did punish me. I'll be honest with you. I remember to this day, later on, I was always an early riser. The family would sleep in till like 7 in the morning. I don't know. I was getting up at like 5:30. I was always an active kid. I would, like, stick my finger in electrical sockets by accident, almost electrocute myself, playing with electric trains. I was a mischievous child. And I remember putting the phone book on the floor, the linoleum floor in that Bronx apartment, to climb up to a shelf. I remember that to this day. Well, I couldn't reach the shelf. I don't even know what was in it. So I got out two glass milk bottles. In those days, they would deliver milk in bottles to our door. In every apartment had to have milk bottles. The milkman cometh. Well, I used the phone book, and then I put the milk bottles on top of the phone book like a smart little monkey to try to get up to that cabinet. And lo and behold, the milk bottles slipped on that surface of the phone book, and they broke all over. The milk spilled all over the kitchen floor. I was so frightened. Well, God didn't punish me, but my father did. He came in and he said, he didn't scream at me. Actually, he was a very reasonable man when things really went bad. And he said, okay, let's just clean it up. You can't cry over spilled milk. That's exactly what he said to me. But you see, that phone book did get even with me because I guess I didn't believe in the phone book enough, and I got punished in one way or another. And so I've turned it into somewhat of a parody. I understand that because I don't want to get too heavy on this. I started by saying I bid $1 million for the Sistine Chapel ceiling, which, of course, was meant in jest. You know it's worth much more. It's probably worth at least $2 million, right? Oh, yeah. It's worth at least $2 million. I mean, the Michelangelo ceiling has got to be worth $2 million, right? Yeah, right. Yeah, two and a half million. I mean, I always loved Botticelli's work. Or how about Raphael? Because it's in the Sistine Chapel. And think of what we could get for the poor that way. Yeah, we're living through world communism. It's rising everywhere you turn. And you want to hear something weird that came to me last night, ladies and gentlemen? I realized that the U.S. and the EU axis is defined by Russophobia. The United States and the emerging Soviet empire of the new European Union, which is sort of like a proto-Soviet empire, is now being defined by Russophobia. And it's odd to me that an ex-communist nation like Russia is standing up to the emerging Soviet empire of the New World Order, as exemplified by the United States and the EU. And I said, wouldn't it be odd if Russia winds up as the last bulwark against world communism? As the world turns, wouldn't it be odd if Vladimir Putin becomes a warrior against total domination by the New World Order? Isn't that an odd thought? And I realize it's bordering on blasphemy. And I think I should pause at this juncture because I don't want to offend more people than I already have. And again, I invite you to comment on any of these topics. There's not too many, maybe 100, maybe one. And the phone number is 855-400-7282. We got loads of calls. Most of them are about Catholics calling. Most of them are Catholics calling me about my comments on the Pope's calling for the redistribution of wealth. Yep. Now, remember this. I was the first in the media to talk about liberation theology, Marxism, and the Pope. And I'm glad to tell you that I'm glad that Russia's producers listen to the show and must copy my monologues down verbatim, because the very next day I heard it on the Limbaugh show. As they say, as they've said, it's nice to be Michael Savage. It's the Savage Nation. The phone number is 855-407-282. And I swear to God, no, I swear to aspirin, the aspirin is working. Yes, I swear by aspirin that my aches and pains are diminishing, and I'll be right back.
Jesu Domine, dona eis requiem.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com, the only company I, Michael Savage, trust to buy my gold and silver from, SwissAmerica.com. I went to a wedding not too long, a couple of years ago, actually, now. And nice people, but not ethnic people. There were non-ethnic people. They were real high European types. There was no food for an hour. People were passing out. I had to get in the car and drive to a Pizza Hut from the fancy catering hall. All they served was alcohol. It was like being in a Swedish hunting lodge. All that was there was severely high alcoholic level beverages with not even a nut. That's not my idea of a party. I put a party on for my daughter years ago, a wedding. As the people got out of their cars and they were walking, this is how I grew up. Someone was waiting with champagne in the parking lot. Then as they walked toward the thing, there was, appetizers. Otherwise, you're seen as skimpy and poor. But those days are over. No one cares what I did. People are into the obsessive compulsive eating disorders in America, and they want to believe that their life would be perfect if only they could find the magic key to the right diet. I'm not saying become a slob and start eating a McDonald's. I didn't say that. There's a balance point, and you have to find it on your own, and I don't want to go back to all the books I've written. My first published book was 1972. I've been writing since 1966. In fact, right now, I don't want to get off on a sidetrack. I'm going through all of my writings and all of my journals. It's a massive library that I have, and I'm trying to get it transcribed. I'm trying to find the right situation, whether it be my journals or my short stories. You know, I wrote Train Tracks, which contained some of my family stories. But I have many, many others, and some of them are a lot darker than what were in Train Tracks. The dark side of me never was shown in Train Tracks. The publisher didn't want it. It was a holiday book. But there's a darker side to me that is never seen. You hear it. You can impute it from my radio show that there's a dark side to me, and there is. Is it bad? The moon has a dark side. Is it a bad moon? I mean, what is it? Everyone's afraid of the dark side. What does the dark side mean? We're all moody. What a dark side. Ooh. What's the dark side? Ooh, dark side. I'm not a goth at night. I don't walk around like with purple hair and lipstick and long fingernails. I didn't mean that. There's a different side that you don't show on the radio, but you can hear it come out sometimes. In fact, the full range of a person's voice often indicates what you're hearing on an intuitive level in my voice is close to the full range of my being. I don't want to get into it because most people don't understand that. The voice is an instrument. Man, woman, it doesn't matter. And the instrument often, you know, tells you what's going on inside the person. No matter what they're talking about, you can hear the person through the voice. I'm getting off track. Look, what's happening here is that you have a failed, collapsed presidency that is, I would say, more corrupt than any presidency I've seen in my lifetime. You've heard this before. You think it's just people who are bashing them because they're not Democrats, they're not liberals, or they're racist, whatever you want to, you know, fill in the blank of your own bias. But what he's doing here, him and his minions are scapegoating both white people and rich people, which is intriguing to me since he's surrounded by white rich people, and most of his funds come from white rich people. That's the intriguing part. But be very careful of the scapegoating, because I told you everything begins with a word and ends with a deed. And when you start scapegoating an entire class of people, whether it be on economics or on race, it ends badly, really badly. Many of you are young and you've been brainwashed in colleges, and even if you had an independent, skeptical mind and you just went along with the program knowing that your radical, disgusting professor forced you to make believe you were listening, but you were smart enough to really know what was going on, the brainwashing has had its effect on you, and you're hobbled in your ability to speak your mind and to even see things as they are, which is, of course, why you're taking time out of your busy day to listen to Michael Savage. I am the uncle you've all wished that you had in your life, and I used to exist in America.
Savage. This is an encore presentation of the Savage Nation.
This is Michael Savage saluting our veterans. God bless the American military on the Savage Nation. Joe Biden's son, Hunter Biden, has taken a position on the board of directors with a Ukrainian energy producer. In any other time, this would not have been done because people would have a fear that there'd be an indictment or a government would fall, the FBI would investigate, there'd be a press outrage, the opposition party would stop all business on the floor of Congress and demand an immediate investigation as to how the vice president's son could take a job with a foreign power with whom we're supposedly an ally against Russia. Without seeing this for what it is, you are blind. It doesn't matter whether Biden would be a Democrat or Republican. This is cronyism. This is crony capitalism. This is the oligarchy. This is nepotism. In Napoleon's time, it was called nepotism. And Napoleon II, or the third, fell because of nepotism. He had appointed so many of his relatives, where so many of his immediate friends and relatives had benefited from his position as the supreme ruler of France, that the government fell because the people rose up. But there are no people in America. Just as there is no England anymore, there's no America anymore. I am talking about the biggest story you're going to hear today, and I'm shocked. Does it all fit together for you now as to where McCain fits in on the screaming for war? Where McCain going over there and screaming, Ukraine is our friends, Russia's our enemy. Do you understand it's all about money? Do you understand they're sacking the world? Do you understand this is another power grab? Now look, 1999, I wrote about the oily tracks running through Kosovo. Your president, Bill Clinton at the time, under the guise of humanitarian efforts, geared towards saving the Albanian Muslims from the evil Serbian Christians, repainted American warplanes with NATO markings, and under the direction of Jamie Rubin, Madeleine Albright, Zbigniew Brzezinski, and the others who were doing it now, bombed Serbia, blew up every bridge on the Danube, blew up schools, hospitals, killed people, and stole Kosovo from Serbia in order not to save the Muslims, the Albanian Muslims, because Big Oil wanted a pipeline through Kosovo. I wrote the article, The Oily Tracks Run Through Kosovo. And the poor Serbs just happened to be the wrong owners of the wrong real estate at the wrong time for the New World Order. But you idiots, you Democrat liars, said you were helping the Muslims who were being put in concentration camps. Now let's move forward to today. Very similar situation in the Ukraine. Thousands of ethnic Russians in Crimea protesting against the new government in Kiev. Okay? Historians still aren't exactly clear why Russia gave Crimea away in 1954. At the time, both Russia and Ukraine were a part of the Soviet Union. And it supposedly has something to do with strengthening brotherly ties. But one thing is clear right now. Russian President Mr. Putin has no intention of letting that gift slip too far from his grip. That's because Ukraine is the choke point in the region for natural gas pipelines that run from Russia to Western Europe. And this battle is really about who controls that choke point. The U.S. State Department practically started this conflict on behalf of NATO. John McCain, the most dangerous man in modern American politics, in my opinion, was on the ground in Ukraine in December, quote, providing assistance to those who are working to overthrow a duly elected Ukrainian government. The United States at that time warned Russia, this was during the Olympics when Russia could not react, the United States warned Russia not to take action against these protesters. And the stooges in the American media showed you the pictures of the protesters who were largely young girls in tight dungarees with iPhones in their behinds, on their behinds. And naturally, Anderson Cooper put on the flak jacket and ran over there because whenever he sees a pair of tight pants with a young protester with an iPhone, he knows that they're the right ones. Our president even drew a pink line. The billion-dollar question is, what is the interest of the United States here? Why has John Kerry stuck his big ketchup bottle into this fight time and time again? While most Americans don't even know where Ukraine is, most Americans are fed up with war, Americans are burned out from Iraq and Afghanistan. Who was banging the loudest war drums? What does it have to do with Joe Biden? I'll tell you in a minute. First, you have to understand that Russia provides about a quarter of the natural gas consumed in the European Union. About 80% of those exports flow through pipelines across Ukrainian soil before the gas arrives in the EU. Another source for those exports to the EU exists in the region, and it's not controlled by Russia. It's very common knowledge that Qatar, Q-A-T-A-R, Qatar, Qatar, no one can pronounce it. They should just change their name to just another Arab country. Qatar has wanted to build a natural gas pipeline to Turkey in order to export gas to Europe. But guess who stood in the way of the first leg of that journey? Syria and Bashar Assad, a Russian ally. Are you starting to see the picture? Syria, so you think the Syrian civil war is over anything but money and oil? You may be wrong. I'm going to move ahead now. I'm going to tell you what's going on right now. According to the Wall Street Journal, Vice President Joe Biden's son, Hunter, and a close friend of Secretary of State John Kerry's stepson have joined the board of a Ukrainian gas producer controlled by a former top security and energy official for deposed President Viktor Yanukovych. That's a quote now. What am I claiming here? I'm claiming right here and right now that the United States has kicked up a civil war in Ukraine to mask a fight over a natural gas pipeline route that, once it is built, will personally benefit family and friends of this administration. This is called cronyism, crony capitalism. This is called nepotism in a polite way, but in a more blunt way, it's called ugly. Who was Hunter Biden? Was he picked by the Ukraine because he's a brilliant lawyer? I don't know. He has a name called Biden, his father's vice president. That couldn't hurt. Did you know that Hunter Biden worked with the Clinton machine in the U.S. Department of Commerce? Did you know that Hunter Biden was the Obama campaign bundler, one of the biggest money guys? Did you know that Hunter Biden helped get his dad elected? There's a lot of money to be made. You see, if they can yank the Ukraine into the U.S. sphere of influence, the Biden-Kerry cartel stands to rake in billions of dollars. Barack Obama said in 2008, I will finally end the abuse of no-bid contracts once and for all. He said that in Grand Rapids in October of 08. Obama lied when he said the days of sweetheart deals for Halliburton will be over when I'm in the White House. What he meant to say was, those days are over for anyone but my friends. Replace the word Halliburton with Biden. The State Department, as corrupt as it is, was challenged on this very topic by the only reporter in the Associated Press I have respect for named Matt Lee. I never heard of him. We're going to play a soundbite for you in a minute that you're going to say, wait a minute, there's actually someone left who's a reporter who dare challenge these lousy, stinking liars. You know, what went on in the ex-Soviet Union after the fall of the wall was a disaster for the Russian people. And initially, the gas was stolen. All of the things that were owned by the state were stolen by the oligarchs. The natural resources were stolen by the Russian oligarchs. We know that. It's going on in front of your eyes right now under this nice guy Obama, who, as you well know, cares only about issues related to human rights. And so that's why you have to understand how dangerous this is, because 52% or so of the people don't work. They could care less who's robbing who. All they know is that government check comes in with the government cheese. All they know is that they're not qualified for medical care because nobody could insure them, and now you're going to pay for it. All they know is that we're living in a nation of giveaways from a nation of takeaways. I want to play for you first the liar, Jay Carney Barker. Jay Carney Barker in clip number one. Listen to this.
I was referring you to the vice president's office. I saw those reports. You know, Hunter Biden and other members of the Biden family are obviously private citizens, and where they work is not does not reflect an endorsement by the administration or by the vice president or president, but I would refer you to the vice president's office.
Listen, you weasel, you. You stinking weasel. You wouldn't get away with this in a democracy. You'd be arrested for this. Of course he's a private citizen, but his name is Biden. He's benefiting from his relationship to the administration. End of story. Liar, liar, liar. Now it gets even better. A reporter, Matt Lee, challenges in clip two, and then the spokesmouth for the State Department again repeats the big lie. Listen to two.
Does this building diplomatically have any concerns about potential perceptions of conflict or slash cronyism, which is what you've often accused the Russians of doing?
No, he's a private citizen.
Again, arrest. Immediate arrest. Citizen's arrest. Immediate. Citizen's arrest. Next, clip three.
You consider that the Russian oligarchs who control, or the Ukrainian oligarchs who control these, they're all private citizens as well.
We certainly wouldn't put them in the same category.
No, I'm not suggesting that.
What do you mean you wouldn't put them in the same category? Why isn't Biden's son the same as a Russian oligarch? Because his name is Biden, not Abramovich? Of course they are. It's identical. Then Lee goes on. He doesn't quit. I can guarantee you after this exchange, the AP will move him into the graveyard shift. He will never fly on Air Force One again. Listen to clip four.
I'm wondering if there are concerns from this building about the perception of about how the Russians and or the Ukrainians would perceive the involvement of a son of the Vice President of the United States in this, especially given the situation.
No, there are not.
Immediate citizen's arrest. Immediate citizen's arrest of the spokesmouth. This has gone too far. Obama is so drunk on his power, using race to get where he is, using race to stay where he is, using race to push his dastardly policies down our throat, and now this corruption has reached a point of no return. I am outraged. I'm livid. There's no other word for it. Livid. L-I-V-I-D. What can I do when we have a drunk in the opposition party, John Drunk Boehner, who doesn't say a word about this cronyism? This rip-off. It's frightening.
Savage.
It's really on my mind is the clutch in my Jag. That's all that's on my mind. No, I can't wait till the show's over. I got a call about tires and clutches. I'm kidding. Anyone out there is a clutch expert, like a guy with a used, who drives like an old stick shift? In other words, if the clutch went when I came to an abrupt halt in an old car, and then I had trouble getting it back in gear, I know the synchro went, so I double-clutched it all the way back up the hill, then I double-clutched it to get back. Drove it home, and the clutch kept going closer to the floor till there was no friction at all, and I was in third gear, and I just went all the way home in third gear. I said, if the light turns red, I'm going through it. One of those, because I'm not getting broken down in this heat. The dog was already frightened. He saw me getting angry and screaming at the car. He was whimpering underneath the dashboard. No, he wasn't whimpering, but I saw he was freaked. He looked in my eyes. Yeah, dogs are. Oh, God, Dad's upset. God, we were just having such a good time. What's wrong with you, Michael? You were coasting along. What's with the anger? The clutch went, Teddy. What do you want from me? What do you want me to feel? He don't know what a clutch is. He knows that God is driving a car in which he is, and God's angry because his clutch went. He thinks we're God. Yeah, they think you're God. You give them food. You take food. You leave them alone. You take them. You feed them. You clothe them. You protect them. So you are God to them. They didn't ask to be born. You have to protect them. The reason we all like little dogs now is that we feel protective. Something. Women don't need us anymore. Women don't need our protection. They're tougher than we are. Get away from me. I can do it on my own. We don't need men. Well, I mean, we don't need men. Nothing. Nobody needs a man anymore. So a lot of guys are like, get little dogs. They got something that needs them. I see a lot of big guys with muscles, with tattoos in parking lots. Cute little dogs. Go up to the guy and it's cute. How come you have a little dog? Yeah, you expect him to have a mastiff, right? With like a thing on its neck. With like spittle coming out of the side, looking like Winston Churchill's housekeeper or something. But no, it's like a little with a ribbon in its head. Big guy, muscles just out of San Quentin. Why do they like little dogs? Because they can give protection to the little dog. They can give something on earth protection. The women don't need you. Nothing. They've succeeded. The women's movement has succeeded. They don't need you anymore. I'm going to do a tour. I don't know when. Everyone says, Michael, you got to own it. You're doing well. You've worked 20 years for what you have. Go to Dallas. Do a show from there. See Dallas. I must say I've never been in the fair city of Dallas. Go to Chicago. Go to State Street. Have a steak. Have a steak. Go to the stockyards. Go to WLS, do a show. Go to New York, WABC, look at 34th Street. Go visit the ancestors down in the graves. That should be fun. That'll be very nice. Yeah, okay, next stop. That's the next stop. Okay, Mom, Dad, how you doing, brother? How are you? No, I'm not ready yet. No, see you in a while. Not ready for that one. L.I.E., into the tunnel, into Manhattan. Ha-ha, meal. Umberto's Clam House, how's the food? Not so great. Tourist trap. Let's go to another Italian restaurant out in Brooklyn where there's real food. Oh, they closed it down? It was found to be a cigar store. Okay. So it comes down to a meal and a bed. Go do your show at WMAL in Washington. You have relatives there. Go visit relatives. Go visit the Air and Space Museum in Washington, which I love, by the way. My favorite museum in the world. The best air museum in the world is in Britain. I'm not allowed to go there, but the day I go back to Britain to look at my plant collections in the Kew Gardens, I will look at the Air and Space Museum. I want to see a SPAD from World War One. I blew the slave cylinder on my clutch. Oh, C. Marcucci of RBR. He must be a car fanatic. I blew the slave cylinder? Is that somehow a racist? Can I be arrested for racism on that? You blew the slave cylinder on your clutch? Neil. Can I be arrested for that? I'm sorry, I didn't mean to do that. I didn't mean to crash the slave cylinder. I don't even like the name slave cylinder when it's in like a parts book. Seems offensive to me. Can't they call it the accessory cylinder or the additional cylinder, clutch additional cylinder? It's so offensive, slave cylinder. Actually, have a thing. I know there's a slave thing on the brakes that I replaced, but not that. All right, we'll have to order one from the Jaguar Parts guy. I'm looking forward to do that.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage. Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage. This is an encore presentation of The Savage Nation.
Remember Memorial Day. Remember who you remember on Memorial Day. It's those veterans under the ground. God bless the American military on The Savage Nation. I want to talk about what should be done with the homeless bums in the United States of America. It's a topic nobody will discuss because the homeless bums have become the sacred cows of America, yet we all understand that there are pox upon the land. Now, many of you will say you're being not compassionate, feel bad for them, there's no money. That's such rubbish. San Francisco spends, I have the number, it's frightening, about $150 million a year on the bums. Now the grifters in the city want to spend another $1.6 million to clean up the crap in the street. They don't have enough money. The bums in this city with their pensions. There's a big story today in the San Filthisco newspaper. SF stands for San Filthisco. Because even the liberals, the dyed-in-the-wool liberals, are saying filthy streets are the number one issue. But the answer, of course, is more funding. In other words, rape the taxpayer. The filthiest alley in San Francisco, they report. And they report the alley. And then they show a worker with a biohazard mask on cleaning an alley next to the communist bookstore owned by Lawrence Key Getty. I oppose as a leftist, owns more real estate than Voltaire owned in his lifetime. But apparently the bums are defecating in the hallways, in the streets, in the doorways, in San Francisco. And even the liberals are offended finally. They can no longer turn up their nose. Porta potties apparently are the streets themselves. And I've been telling you about this for years. And the whole city stinks. Rotten, stinking to the core. And everyone looks the other way. The fact of the matter is, the city has enough money to take care of this, but they don't. I'd like to know what should be done with the homeless bums in the United States of America, not just San Filthisco. San Filthisco is the dirtiest city in the United States. It's caught in the dirty skirts. Nobody will talk about it. They say, oh, it's such a beautiful city. Whoa, what beautiful weather. All true. It's why I live here. But they don't actually walk the streets. I do. And I'm sick. I'm sick of the bums with their pit bulls. I'm sick of them with their attacks. And I'm going to ask you for homeless horror stories. I know everyone says, God dang, why didn't I think of that? There's plenty of money for their care. You know it's a racket for many organizations. The Homeless Coalition for this, the Homeless Coalition for that. Now the communists want another $7 million in funding to clean up the doo-doo in the streets. $2.7 million to add patrols and rangers to look for graffiti, vandalism, and filth. Of course, the homeless radicals, the homeless industry, does not want rangers. The people in the cities who make a fortune off the homeless really like the homeless. They like the urine. They like the feces. And it's not a losing battle. What you do is you put them into work camps. Where is the money? Where is the money? It's in the hands of the corrupt politicians. Where's the money? Where does the $200 million a year or so that is deemed for homeless housing and this and that, where's it gone? Who's making that money? First of all, the homeless get money. That's number one. Then they get food. That's number two. Have you seen the liberals on their hands and knees giving them turkey sandwiches and tuna? They ask him, would you like turkey, tuna, veggie? The question I have is, why don't they give them eco-toilet paper? In other words, if they're going to really go all the way in their liberalism, since they're bending over backwards, getting on their hands and knees, and, excuse me, Mr. Jones, how are you today? Can we give you a turkey, a tuna, a cheese, a lacto-ovo, can we give you a lacto-ovo vegetarian sandwich, Mr. Jones? Can we give you a gluten-free? We have gluten-free toilet paper as well, if you'd like. So now even the liberals in the San Filthisco newspaper are saying the streets are a mess and they need to be cleaned up because the tourists are complaining. And they make their mess in bus stops, alleys, and doorways, anywhere they want. And apparently there used to be workers who took care of this, and there are a few left. But everybody knows that the city is the most corrupt in the United States of America. Everybody knows that. How about the San Francisco mayor and the supervisors? Why don't they clean up the homeless waste? And why don't they take in two homeless people per week to live with them? I think that the supervisors in the city should be forced to take the homeless that they put upon, that they foisted upon us with their policies into their homes. The feces have reached a compelling point now. And what does one of the supervisors want? He wants $1.6 million in additional funding to clean the gutters, to clean the streets. Well, why not start by cleaning the streets of the bums? Put them in homeless camps. Many of them are absolutely capable of helping build the homeless camps. There were labor camps in the history of California that were built with people's labor. You don't have to hire unions to do it. I'm asking you what should be done. It's a big topic in San Francisco, New York, Chicago, Atlanta, wherever you go. It's the hidden story of our streets. Why are they in the streets? Now you'll hear, well, we can't afford to live in the city. Well, that's what the suburbs were built for. And if you can't afford the suburbs, that's what rural counties were originally developed for people who couldn't afford cities. You say, well, okay, that's not compassionate. I told you yesterday on this show when I was a young guy working as a social worker, I made $5,750 a year. I had to live in a crappy apartment in Queens, New York. I hated it. I had to ride the subway to go into work. I dreamed of a $135 a month apartment in Lower Manhattan, in Greenwich Village, where I wanted to live in one of those alleys, one of those beautiful streets, paved, brick streets. The apartment I had in mind was unaffordable. I couldn't afford $135 a month. It had a brick wall. It had a fireplace. It was a studio. I thought I'd be a real artiste if I lived there. Just think how I could pose, what a poseur I could have been had I lived in Greenwich Village. Instead, I was a tunnel guy. I was a bridge and tunnel rat. I was one of the weekend warriors that came in from Queens. Well, all right, that was then, this is now. In other words, if you couldn't afford to live in the city, you lived in the suburbs. You couldn't afford Queens, you lived in Suffolk County. You couldn't afford that, you moved further out. That's what the Long Island Railroad was invented for in New York. What's all new about this? But now we have an additional element, which is the homeless bums. And everybody knows it's a problem, and no one will talk about it because they're afraid, oh, they'll call you a Nazi if you talk about cleaning up the homeless mess. And the real question is, why does everyone ignore the issue of those in the gutters? I mean, some say don't call them homeless. Technically, you're correct. The Constitution doesn't guarantee you housing. I've had to work for it all my life, and I've said to you 1,000 times, no one guarantees you anything. It's, again, like the Obamacare. Okay, we can go into that another time, but now we'll talk about the fact that even San Francisco, even the San Francisco newspaper has written an article today about the filth in the streets, that it's the number one problem. The alleys are full of feces, urine. You don't want to hear it. People who live in the city know that these bums crap in their doorways, and if you say anything, the cops arrest you. Right now, I'm sitting in my studio, high on the hill, looking down upon it all. Okay, fine, I'm immune from it. But every time I go into the city, I can't take it anymore. Especially the aggressive bums with the attack dogs around the they're all drug addicts, 90% of them or more, around the ferry terminal. They live in the park. It's disgusting. You know, somebody has to stand up and say it's enough catering to them already. They're parasites on society. I'm sorry, they're not parasites. They're the sacred cow. They actually contribute to society. They actually contribute more than, let's say, a doctor or an engineer. They certainly contribute more than anyone else in society. They're sacred. You should get on your hands and knees and give them a turkey sandwich and ask them how they're feeling today. It's enough already. Talk about it. Talk to me. What would you do if you had the power to solve the homeless problem that was foisted upon us by liberals and liberalism? It didn't come out of the blue. Look, they're always bums. I was a kid. Again, I'll give you the kid story. Lower East Side, Dad owned an antique store, Ludlow Street. Now it's a Mr. Hippie area, everything's expensive. And around the corner was the Bowery, again turned into, I can't believe it, luxury housing for the idiots from Cleveland. But the Bowery at that time was filled with nothing, wall-to-wall drunks, wall-to-wall laying in the gutter. Next to my father's store, the bums would come and lay in the gutter. And here's what he said about it. He never said anything bad, he didn't say hurt them, I'm not saying that either. I'm a compassionate guy. This is a public health issue, for God's sakes. Use your head. Take your lens of liberalism off your eyes and think about what I'm saying. Even you idiots who use eco-toilet paper and give yourself hemorrhoids from the wood chips, even you understand that the homeless have gotten out of control. And the more you give them sugar, the more they're going to come to the sugar cane. So the cities give them homeless services. So where what are you going to do, attract them or repel them? The common sense. So Dad would say, look, he said, they lay in the street, they're poor. And he used to say to me, if only the evil alcohol manufacturers would put B vitamins in their drinks, many of them wouldn't be as sick as they are. I learned a lot about nutrition from that one remark. I said, what do you mean, Dad? He said, because B vitamins could help their thinking, could help their skin, their brains. You say, how did he know this? A guy who never went to college. How does he know more than Mayor de Blasio? How does he know more about the issue than the President of the United States? Because the man had common sense. I'll be right back. It's the Savage Nation.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now. 855-400-SAVAGE. 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com. The only company I, Michael Savage, trust to buy my gold and silver from. SwissAmerica.com. Have you ever gone to anyone's house who's like a global warming nut? How their whole life is green and that's their religion? Like, it's from the top to the bottom, their doxy is a religion. They don't eat animal products, that's a given. They're on a gluten-free diet, even though they don't know what gluten is. They have eco toilet paper that you could sand fine wood with. The toilet paper's of the type that you find in a Port Authority toilet or a Greyhound bus. You can't use it. The human being cannot use that. Prisons in the Boko Haram prison camp could not use that toilet paper that they have in their house. It has fibers in it. It could cause a disease. It could rip you open underneath your body. I mean, it's crazy. This is an eco house. And you know, I don't care whether they're in Beverly Hills or in the Upper East Side of Manhattan. They make you use Boko Haram toilet paper. Eco toilet paper with fibers left. Recycled paper. In other words, if you were on a Greyhound bus, the paper would be softer. Why is that? Are they that crazy? They don't see the stupidity of the hypocrisy? They don't. Rich people with toilet paper from Boko Haram. I guarantee you, if you went into an average lib's home, like really billionaire lib, the toilet paper would be eco toilet paper. With fibrous toilet paper that cuts you. And no matter what you say, you have to bring your own toilet paper to their houses. You have to sneak in a piece. I know it's guys like, what is he saying? It's funny, though. It's true. Because they're crazy. The hypocrisy is overwhelming. Drugs substituted for God. And you can't underestimate what I'm saying. That's an absolute truth. The higher the drug use, the lower the God use. It doesn't mean that there's no crossover. It doesn't mean there's not hypocrisy. It doesn't mean that there aren't many people who are fakers. I didn't say that. But the higher the atheism, the higher the drug use. That's my opinion. And you look at Hollywood and the ones who espouse the most frequently espouse their hatred of God and non-existent. They're drug addicts. By their own admission, they're stoned all the time. And also their embracing of socialism, even though they're huge capitalists. Again, because their brains don't work properly. They're huge capitalists. They make a lot of money. And yet they espouse socialism. Look at poor Sean Penn. The man is feeble-minded. By any definition, he's feeble-minded. By what he says and how he lives. It doesn't make sense. It doesn't add up. That's feeble-mindedness. So, you see what I'm saying? Can we move on to another topic? I think most people are bored already. You bored or not bored? Did you like better the toilet paper joke? I bet you like that more than the God talk. No, I know how people think. You were bored already of the God stuff, and when the teacher talked about toilet paper, you laughed hysterically. That you'll remember tonight to tell someone about. That liberals have... The eco-liberals all have the eco-toilet paper, the green toilet paper that's full of wood fibers. Worse than what you'd find in the jungle in Boko Haram. And I've been in the jungles of Fiji. My God, I don't want to get in scatological now. Don't think I'm going down that road, but no, it is. It's a whole world unto itself. Like what you do, I mean, God. Leaves originally. But why would you make toilet paper with specks of wood in it? And call that an eco product. The green toilet paper. Can you imagine being in Jane Fonda's house or Ted Turner? Wait, what kind of toilet paper do they use? You know, that might be a giveaway of whether they're hypocrites or not. In other words, if they're truly eco greenies, if they're truly a greenie, global warming maniac, warmest. Let's say they're a true warmest. They wear eco clothing, eco food. They vote their belief system. They dress with eco clothing, eco, right? Then they'd have to have eco toilet paper. I think that's a good test. It's a very fair statement that I'm making. That's the final arbiter of whether or not they're true greens, is the relative softness of their toilet paper. It sounds funny. It's actually a good test of how eco they are. Right? I mean, think about that. Like, if you went to Warren Buffett's house, he likes to, he has PR agents probably, God knows what he spends you to make himself look like a humble guy. And okay, it's all PR. It's like all of them. But a test for him, as well, how eco he is what kind of toilet paper does he have? Does he have rough eco toilet paper or the smooth, the softy toilet paper? I mean, that's the test right there, because that's the final arbiter. It's not whether he's gluten-free, because that you could be eco and be not gluten-free, but you cannot be an eco-maniac and have soft toilet paper, because they believe that the trees that are cut down, the virgin trees, cause global warming. That's how crazy they are. I know it's getting like crazy now, but truthfully, this is good. I feel better talking about that than I do talking about Boko Haram. You know, I really do. Boko Haram. Boko Haram says Western education is banned. It's exactly what the feminists espoused for years. Hey, hey, ho, ho, Western civilization has got to go. So in other words, the entire left believes in Boko Haram's phraseology. At least that's one man's opinion. Okay, it's comedic in the political arena. I get it.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
We continue to salute our veterans on Memorial Day with the Savage Nation. I've got to tell you, I just found a file of my early articles from 1999. I want to read you some of the headlines, and I want you to understand not only that we're still repeating history with regard to Bill Clinton, Hillary Clinton, and the radical left, but that most of what you hear in talk radio was stolen from me over the years. Almost everything you're hearing has already been spoken before by me. Okay, October 14th, 1999, Weimar once again. October 22nd, 1999, the Clinton Library, L-I-E-B-U-R-Y. October 27th, 1999, is there a Dr. Mrs. Mengele in the Senate? November 2nd, 1999, Red Diaper Doper Babies, the ACLU. November 4th, 99, Hate Crimes Becoming Fake Crimes. Hate Crimes, the Tolerant Inquisition. November 12th, 99, Investigate the Reverend High Jackson under RICO. November 17th, Microsoft to be micromanaged by Microminds. November 24th, Immigrants and Epidemics, Part 1. And here's a big one. November 30th, the oily tracks running through Kosovo. December 8th, 1999, is La Raza Racist. December 15th, White Male Inventions. December 18th, 1999, Hillary's Pet Author Explodes. And December 23rd, Trickle Down Immorality. There are others. There are others. January 19th, 2000, Mike Savage Goes National. 25th of January, 2000, Daisy Chain Immigration. Sluts and Virgins, February 14th. Now, in the month of February, I did parts 1, 2, and 3 of the immigration scandal. So now I'm talking about the homeless. Why? Because I'm bored of Democrat-Republican. That's as simple as that. And I'll tell you another reason why I'm talking about the homeless. Because liberalism has created this. It was liberalism that foisted the bums on the streets. It was liberals like Governor Edmund Pat Brown, God rest his soul, who put the bums out onto the streets. Now, they say Reagan did it. What they don't know is that Governor Edmund Pat Brown is the one who closed the mental hospitals in California by law, by edict, and Reagan had to enact the law. That's not to say Reagan was perfect. I'm just telling you a historic fact. The liberals threw the mental hospital doors, locked the doors shut, and said, they don't belong in mental hospitals, put them on the street. How many of the homeless people should really be in a mental hospital? Say, well, you don't really need that, you know, they're snake pits. There's a great degree of truth in that. But what is the answer then? To just give them psychoactive drugs and checks every day and then leave them in the streets? Urinating, defecating, fouling the streets from San Francisco to Maine? What do you do with these people? Can you ignore them forever? Are there homeless horror stories? Yes, there are. Quite a few. Quite a few. Now, they are human beings. We all have to remember that. And you could say, but for the grace of God, there go I. I don't happen to believe it, incidentally. You know, I love that. For the grace, oh, you could be homeless. Yeah, you're not going to be homeless tomorrow. You're not going to let yourself fall down to that level. I don't want to hear any more that, but for the grace of God, there goeth I. That applies to a certain extent, but not in every case of someone down on their luck. There's a lot of people who are just that way, and if there's a free handout, they'll take it. And if you make it easy enough for them, they'll stay there. If you made it a little harder for them, they may work their way out of the gutter. It's that simple. And if he created workfare all over again and said, you want the check, you got to clean the gutter. You want the check, here's the hose. You want a check, here are the gloves and a clothespin. Clean up what you just did in the street. You know, you put those laws in place, maybe you'd have a clean city again. You have to understand something. If you have a child who defecates on the floor and you say, oh, Johnny, that's beautiful. That's really impressionistic art. Well, Johnny smears fecal matter on the walls. I'm getting graphic now. Oh, Johnny, that is so creative. That looks like Chagall, doesn't it, honey? You don't think there are liberal women who would say that? That's how blinded they are by their worldview? All right, I made my point. I say law and order, crack down, get tougher, plain English, clean up the streets. The stink is out of control. San Francisco is a beautiful porta potty. It's a porta potty with Queen Anne fronts and Mary Ann behinds. That's right. Oh, what a beautiful little Victorian. I'll never forget the first week I moved here. There was a realtor showing me houses. I should have bought every one I looked at the time. And he was a wonderful guy. He was a gay realtor, terrific guy. I think we remained friends for years till he got sick and died. He was so funny. He said, oh, he said, you'll find when you live in this city that we call these houses Queen Anne fronts and Mary Ann behind. I thought that was the funniest real estate statement I've ever heard in my life. I'm sure it'll be ripped off tonight on a real estate show. But that's what it is, city of Queen Anne fronts and Mary Ann behinds. It smells like a porta potty. That's because the unions have ripped off the money. Fire women make $500,000 a year. You don't know what they make. You have no idea. How about spending some of that money on steam cleaning machines or the old brush and hose job that I had in the Bronx that went by, the street cleaner with the brush, the big brush, what it's somehow an ecological disaster that a street sweeper go by? What would be wrong with that? It goes by, and you have to understand that, clean the city. The brush and the water. I love that they still have them, but they're not allowed to use water because of the drought. So now they kick up all of the pollen and the rat droppings into the air. Instead of spraying the water underneath the brushes, the brushes go around kicking up a cloud of filth that you never saw in your life. Dust, pollen, rat droppings. No sense. There's no common sense anymore. There's nobody in charge. It is an insane asylum. It's an insane asylum. It's that simple. And I'm trying to make sense out of it. Whether I'll have any impact doesn't matter to me. I've been doing it for 20 years. Maybe I'll do it for another 20 minutes. God only knows. There's a particular corner where there used to be a Bank of America. It may still be. And a bus stop. It's one of the filthiest corners in the city. And I ask myself how a city that prides itself on its so-called charm and beauty could permit this to go on, why they don't force people to clean it up. I don't understand it. I really don't understand how the city functions at all. All I know is they rob the taxpayer, and they steal the money for their pensions. And that's why I've tried to run a campaign of potholes, no pensions. You take a look at a little town outside San Francisco called Larkspur, California, just a little sleepy hollow town in Marin County. Beautiful little town. If you looked at the pensions that the crooks who run the town give themselves, and then you look at the brokenest streets in Northern California, you say, how are they allowed to steal the taxpayers' money for themselves without going to jail? How? Just look at the top. From the top to the bottom, from the town to the White House, there's nothing but graft, bribery, and corruption. As Samuel Johnson, the great British essayist, wrote, the law is an ass. A-S-S. And he meant a donkey by that. He didn't live in San Francisco. He said, the law is an ass. Great British essayist, one of the great white males of all time in terms of literature. I realize it doesn't have the flavor, let's say, of Al Sharpton, but he did the best he could, the essayist of the 18th century. He was trying in his own way to stumble through a vocabulary of about 150,000 words. And today, of course, if you have a vocabulary of less than 250 words of English, the lower your vocabulary, the higher you go in the American media, apparently. Look at Al Sharpton. Or take a look at some of your sports figures. The lower the vocabulary. Or look at the music business. I once did a parody of a rap artist. It was called 50 Words of English. And the lyrics that I wrote were, I speak 50 words of English and I made $50 million last year. I know 50 words of English, etc. You get the picture? It's called The Death of a Civilization. In my opinion, though, that's why I'm talking about the homeless. They are the embodiment of the degeneration of a society and a civilization. Listen, anyone who would, any society that would tolerate armies of the homeless in the streets, for whatever the reasons, even whatever side you take on the issue, is a dying civilization. It's that simple. It's a dying civilization. With the billions and billions of dollars in tax revenue that Obama steals from us, and that the city fathers and mothers steal from you, you're telling me there's no solution for the people living in the gutters? You know there is. How much of the money that goes to the homeless? Hey, let's be clear. Now let's clear the air. Let's clear the air. Why do they do nothing about it? Okay, you're a homeless bum. You're collecting food stamps. You're collecting welfare. You're collecting this. You're collecting that. Where does your money go? You're not sending it home to your mother. You're spending it. What are you buying? Drugs. So it goes into the underground economy. You're telling me that a lot of that doesn't filter back up to you-know-who? It doesn't flow like a reverse flush toilet from the gutter right into the boardroom? Something's wrong with this picture. If a city of San Francisco spends over $100 million a year on, quote, homeless services, where does that money go? There must be dozens of companies that cater to the homeless. What is that? Where's that money going? It's not going in their hands. It's being taken from middlemen, number one. Then it goes in their hands and they spend it on drugs and alcohol. So there is a whole cycle here that has to be looked at its entirety. But there's a way to cut through it all and straighten it all out. And I went to a charity dinner. I go once a year to the Marin General Hospital Foundation. I support their emergency room because they've helped me a lot. I wound up in there three times in the last year and they gave me great care. I wish that I could get better care than the illegal aliens, but I had to wait online behind people who aren't even citizens to get my care. But once I got in there, past the illegal aliens who were coughing and spewing in the ER room, I got great care. So I become very, you know, as helpful as I can right now. So I went to the dinner, and I had a table of eight friends I invited. Gala dinner under a tent in Sausalito, California. Everyone's heard of Sausalito. Beautiful by the bay. I mean, everything was first class, and my friends were great. And someone said to me, Jay, I noticed that almost everyone at your table is a doctor or a lawyer. I said, no, they're all doctors with only one lawyer. I said, I only invited one lawyer or the rest are doctors. She laughed at it. I invited my lawyer, Dan Horowitz, and I introduced him to all the doctors saying, if ever you need a lawyer, he's the only one to use. So here's the point of the story. During the course of the very busy, crowded evening, one man after another came up to me and whispered, oh, I've listened to you for so many years. I really enjoy your show. I agree with every word you say. These were conservative men who were hiding their conservatism in this communist county, faking it, making believe that they go along with the program of lies and the cheaters. And I keep saying, why do they have to hide their politics? These are powerful men. They're wealthy men, I said to myself. What are they hiding their politics for? What? From who? Who are they hiding it from? And it brought me to a bigger question. Why are you afraid to discuss your politics? Why? What are you afraid of? Who is going to criticize you that you can't stand up to? Do you understand that we have all the power in this country? You, the listener. That if every one of you said enough is enough, I'm not taking this garbage anymore, I'm going to say it like it is, just like Savage does. He puts himself out there every day, I'm going to do it. I don't care who doesn't talk to me anymore. They have to understand what this administration is doing in this country and what they're trying to do. The corruption has reached, it stinks. It's like an outhouse. They've turned it into an outhouse. The corruption is a mile high. It's 5,000 feet in the air, the corruption. Any other president would have been impeached by now. One scandal after another and the Teflon Don can't be touched. They can't touch the Teflon Don. I'll be right back. It's the Savage Nation.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
How long have I told you? Remember, I'm the only member of the major American media, certainly amongst talk show hosts, who knows anything about nutrition, vitamins, health. None of them know anything about it. Most of them are either lawyers or high school dropouts or golfers or whatever. God bless them. They know nothing about medicine and nutrition. I'm the only one who does. Well, how long have I told you that this idiocy about gluten sensitivity is a complete hysteria? It's mass hysteria. Let's go all the way back in time from the beginning of recorded history. Bread, the staff of life. Jesus, give us this day our daily bread. But now you wake up and you've reinvented marriage, you've reinvented the weather, now you're going to reinvent wheat and tell yourself that wheat is poisoning you because you're brainwashed, you have no capacity for reason. Let me prove it to you. Am I going to prove it to you? No. The researcher who first provided key evidence of gluten sensitivity, remember who I'm talking about now. He's not a Republican. Don't already write him off as an oil magnate who works for the Koch brothers. The researcher who provided key evidence of non-celiac disease gluten sensitivity just published a follow-up study that shows the opposite. The first follow-up paper came out last year in the journal Gastroenterology. It says that there is no non-celiac gluten sensitivity. He was mistaken. And he did a very serious study on it. You don't even know what gluten is, but you're sure that you're better when you don't have it, right? You've proven it to yourself. In fact, when you go to a restaurant to show how kosher you are, you tell the waiter that you're a gluten-free personality and you need a special menu. The fact of the matter is, gluten is now a huge industry. See, I have been in the health area for a long time, since 1970s. I've written books on it. And I came to realize somewhere along the way that many of the people who claim to have this sensitivity or that sensitivity, and they go in restaurants and demand special this and special that, what they are is descendants of Orthodox Jewish people who were rabbis who wanted to eat only kosher food. But since they lost or eschewed their religion, their way of showing their non-religion is to show that they're gluten sensitive or lactose intolerant. And that way they separate themselves out from those who eat treif. So in other words, saying, you're a barbarian, I'm different, I'm better than you, I'm sensitive too. Now fill in the blank. I know this is offensive to you, which is why I'm trying to do it. I'm trying to wake you up by slapping you around with the truth. Gluten, my friends, is a protein found in wheat, barley, and other grains. It's what gives bread its chewiness. In fact, if you pick up certain pasta products, it says gluten-rich wheat. Why would they make pasta with gluten-rich wheat? So that the pasta doesn't disintegrate in the cooking pot. By the way, it's also used as a meat substitute. If you ever had wheat meat, seitan, or mock duck at a Thai restaurant, that's gluten. Now, the experts tell us that only 1% of Americans, about 3 million people, actually suffer from celiac disease. And yet 18% of the morons in America, in the adult population, now demand gluten-free foods. The fact of the matter is, I've told you that common sense would dictate that gluten is not toxic for most people except those with real celiac disease. So what did the scientist who first blew the whistle in a mistaken way, to show that there was gluten sensitivity among non-celiacs, what did he do? He did a very important study. He tested many people. And I'm not going to give you all the details because you'll get lost in the shuffle. But here's the thing to remember. He put subjects, both controls and subjects, on high gluten, low gluten, and no gluten diets, meaning placebo diets. The self-diagnosed gluten-sensitive patients expected to feel worse on the study diets, so they felt worse on the diets. You understand that?
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage. Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, the Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage. This is an encore presentation of the Savage Nation.
Salute our veterans with Michael Savage this Memorial Day. Over the weekend, I went to Barnes & Noble, and I bought some magazines and some books. What did I buy? First thing I ran for was the Quarterly Journal of Military History, my new favorite magazine. And the headline is, Who Lost the War, Hitler or His Generals? I had to read that one because revisionist historians say that Hitler destroyed the military through his impulsiveness and his foolishness and his lack of intelligence. While this article argues to the contrary, the generals themselves were incompetent. In other words, they were all crazy and they were all very lucky in the beginning. And was it not for the Soviet Union and its massive forces that this moron, crazy, racist lunatic took on? And was it not for the lunatic declaring war on the United States, Hitler might have won World War II, God forbid? Which is an interesting supposition. I then read about how Cortez defeated the Mexicans, what he did to defeat them, how he worked with tribes within Mexico to overturn the leaders of Mexico at the time. In other words, just like our leaders are working with the enemy invaders and are succeeding beyond their wildest dreams without causing a revolution in the country, they're just on the cusp of granting amnesty to 30 million illegal aliens. What you don't understand is that the leadership in this country is so totally corrupt that they're selling us out to a foreign power. You don't understand that it's very, very much akin to the perfect storm in 1521 when Cortez destroyed the Mexica Empire. Obama, Reed, Pelosi et al. Are the equivalent of Cortez, and they're working to destroy the American nation as we know it. Because should they succeed with the Republican sellouts in granting an amnesty to these millions of illegal aliens, I estimate 30 million, with chain migration it could be as high as 60 million, there will be no America anymore. It will be gone right in your lifetime. And then I bought some other books to show you my interest levels. The Lost Worlds of the Vikings. I was interested in a little bit more on the Vikings. I'm considering a Viking funeral for myself at the end of the line. I've been thinking about it. I've been thinking about it for years. You know, boat, fire, out in the lake, the whole thing. And I always liked Greenland. Always liked the Viking culture. Then I bought these books. When the Mob Ran Vegas, Theories of Money, Mayhem, and Murder. Loved reading that one on the Cal Neva Lodge and Frank Sinatra. I'll tie it into politics in a few minutes. And then finally, to top it off, I bought another book, a bargain price book for $7.98. I only buy bargain price books. I recommend you buy only new books when I write them, but bargain books otherwise. The Mafia, First-Hand Accounts from Inside the Mob, by Frankie Saggio, Joey Black, Donnie Brasco, Albert DeMeo, Richard Kuklinski, and many more, edited by Nigel Cawthorn and Colin Cawthorn. And the first chapter is about the word Mafia and from where it derives. I thought that was very interesting, to show you where my mind was at over the weekend. And then one last little personal note. If you want to talk about any of these topics, please, you can, you can't. I'll read the headlines in a minute. It's a radio talk show, so it can go in any direction I choose to put it in. It usually has to go in the direction in which I'm interested. Otherwise, you're not interested. If I'm interested, you're interested. If I'm just mailing it in, which is what's going on today in the media, you're not going to be interested, which is why the media is collapsing, because everyone's mailing it in. By and large, same old headlines every day, same stories you can get on Drudge or anywhere else in 2 seconds. Why do I need to repeat that for you? I don't. Just before the show started, I was sitting in a high state of fugue. High fugue. And I said, you know what I really want to talk about is my style of method talking. You see, in acting, there's a thing called method acting that was taught by Lee Strasberg. And many great American actors that you probably still know, I mean, followed him. Paul Newman, Marilyn Monroe, Dustin Hoffman, Al Pacino, studied under Lee Strasberg. Lee Strasberg, who perfected the method acting school played Meyer Lansky in The Godfather. Little Jewish guy, white hair. But he was actually one of the great acting coaches. So now what does it have to do with talk radio? It has this to do with it. I, Michael Savage, have developed the Free Association School of Talking. That's right. Just as Lee Strasberg has been credited for pioneering the method acting school of acting as a member of the group theater in New York. I haven't created a group theater, but I have created the Savage Nation. And I'm going to talk with you a few moments about the Free Association School of Talking by Michael Savage, because no one can copy it. It's almost impossible to do. You can't learn it. You can't even be taught. It can be taught, but you have to have a natural gift for it in order to even do it. And many of you love it. Many of you don't even understand it, but here's how it works. What is free association with regard to talking on the radio? First of all, if you're an ordinary talk show host, and you could be a very good one, don't try it because it won't work. It's almost impossible to make it work unless you've been in 30 years of self-analysis, minimum. Minimum 30, maybe maximum of 50, after that you're senile, of self-analysis, where there's a very little barrier between your subconscious and your conscious. I've trained myself to let my subconscious talk. without fearing what might come up. And there were many years where what came up scared the hell out of me, the heck out of me. I was terrified of what was down there. But then I learned to live with it all. Frankenstein, Einstein, William Shakespeare, Moses, you name it, Genghis Khan, they're all in there. We're all everything. We are all basically everything, which is why there are so many mad people running around in America today, because the drugs have enabled these demons to come out. But if you study traditional cultures as I have done, and lived in them as I have done, and steep yourself in them as I have done, you can find out that without psychedelics, you can tap into this substrata of your psyche. But it's very frightening, and I'm saying don't try it on the radio, because it can be very dangerous. But I have skilled myself to let the subconscious talk through my conscious voice. So what is the Free Association School of Talking by Michael Savage? Many of you don't even know what you're listening to right now. You figured I'd say Democrats bad, Republicans good. Or I talk about Hillary Clinton's eyeglasses. Or I would talk about Barack Obama's mania for mind control. I may probably not even do it because it's all there. If you go back to the Bible and you read the biblical prophets, whether it's Isaiah or the others, you'll see Free Association. Basically, he was rapping in the desert. What do you think Isaiah was doing? He was as close to heat stroke as you can get. He's talking about a burning bush and this and that and don't do this and don't do that and ba-ba-ba, ba-poop-ba-be and ba-ba-ba. And I see this and I see that and you're no good and I'm great and da-da. In other words, in our day, he would have been either a lunatic or a talk show host. So that was Isaiah. Now, you move up to modern times. The next big jump in free association can be seen in the 1700s. Tristan Shandy by Lawrence Stern, Irish writer. Incredible. You have to look it up on Google. Actually, Wikipedia on Tristan Shandy. It's fascinating. He starts to tell you his life story, and it takes him about 100 pages to even tell you he was born. Because before he's born, he talks about what happened to his mother and why having a big nose is important for a person for a person's life. It's about a guy who starts to tell you the simplest story, and in his meanderings, he tells you, okay, he's going over to, let's say, visit his in-laws, and on the way he passes an alley, and in the alley there's a lady of the night, and he talks to the lady of the night, and he goes on and on about what happens in the alley, and then he gets distracted within the distraction, within the distraction, within the distraction. That's free association. If it's done well, it's phenomenal. Now you come up to our age. On stage, you had Mort Saul in the 50s. He's still living, by the way. He's in his 90s here in Marin County. And he's still performing. Mort Saul was a free associationist who, as a child, I didn't even understand what he was doing. He got up on a stage with a newspaper under his arm, sweater, newspaper, 1950s. I was a little kid. And he would start to just rap on the news of the day. That's free association. In a loose forum set around the news, that's free association. Lenny Bruce was not free associationist at all. Lenny Bruce had written scripts in the sense that he wrote, he used to say, give me 5 minutes of dynamite. Remember that? Those of you remember, he said, get on the stage, but make sure you have 5 minutes of dynamite. So all of his early stuff, which was brilliant, was fundamentally structured and written. It was not free associational. He became free associational after he became a junkie and had court cases. That was free association dreck. That's when Lenny Bruce started to get awful. He was an embarrassment at that point. This morning I wake up with a shocking dream, and I don't know what it was, from reading or watching something. I'm standing in Nazi Germany as the Nazis are coming to power. It's me in real time now, but it's then. In other words, I had a forward-backward thing. I'm standing there on a bridge watching the Nazis march by in their crisp uniforms, so many of them, and I'm praying to God that they don't discover that I'm not a Nazi. And I'm standing there terrified that they're going to look at me and know that I'm not a Nazi, and they're going to take me in and do horrible things to me. Now, I know why I had that dream, because I feel like I'm living in an occupied nation. Everywhere I go in America, I feel as though I'm living in an occupied nation. I didn't say occupied by Nazis, but the dream is quite profound in terms of its comparables to what's going on under Barack Obama, Nancy Pelosi, Harry Reid, and the other fascisti, who are pretending in the name of the downtrodden and the poor to build a totalitarian regime unlike any ever seen in the United States of America. And I want to remind you of something. If they could destroy the doctors, which they've done, if they could take on the doctors and the hospitals and the insurance companies, which they've done, and crush them, then they can crush anybody, and they know it. They have almost completed their revolution. Not quite. There are a few impediments to this liberal fascist revolution. And one of the greatest impediments to them right now is the Second Amendment. They're terrified of it. Witness the back off at the Bundy Ranch standoff. Harry Reid backed off because he didn't want to shoot men, women, and children with his SS squad, the Bureau of Land Management, who was the equivalent of the SA or the SS. The BLM thugs with their scope rifles aimed at the children and the women were the equivalent of his own personal SS bodyguard. They were ready to pull the trigger, and somebody wisely said, do not do it. I'll be right back. It's the Savage Nation.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com, the only company I, Michael Savage, trust to buy my gold and silver from, SwissAmerica.com. Jerry Vale died. You may know Jerry Vale, you may not know him. White-haired guy, sang in many movies. You've probably seen him in Casino, entertaining the people at the... No, was it Casino? No, it was in Goodfellas, where they go to the Copa and Jerry Vale is singing. That incredible voice of his. He was a friend of Frank Sinatra. Let's play a Jerry Vale song for those of you out there who are over the age of 103.
You've got a great voice. Volare.
I don't like this one, kill it. Everyone knows Volare. Anyone could sing it. A drunk sanitation worker could sing Volare. You know, you compare a man like him. Listen to his voice compared to the rap stars up there. Listen. The rap stars have a voice like this? Well, that's racist of me to say that? A guy rubbing his crotch and talking about raping people, that's the same song to you? All right, whatever. The different strokes for different folks, I guess. Whatever floats your boat, as they used to say in the 1910 era. Now, it was a long time ago, 1910 era. So here we are. Look at the day we have today. This a nightmare to wake up to this. I didn't want to play these speeches, but I couldn't believe what I was listening to. They're causing the conflict. You see, when you spend every moment of every single day looking for negative qualities in the people around you, you're going to find negative qualities in the people around you. Whether it's your neighbor, whether it's your wife, whether it's your husband, whether it's your daughter, whether it's your son, whether it's your father, whether it's your mother, whether it's your banker, or whether it's your whatever. If you constantly search for something bad, you're going to find it. And that's what the Obamas do. They don't look for the goodness in their fellow man. They look for the evil in the white man. Everything that comes out of them is racially oriented. There's almost not a speech that's off the cuff that's not aimed at stoking racial enmity in this country. Why is that? In other words, if it's not their intent, which I think it is, then let's look at it from a psychological point of view. Why would Michelle Obama give a speech to a largely African-American student body about chains coming here and chains, Brown versus Board, 1954? What is she saying to them? She looks at the world through the eyes of a resentful human being. She resents this country. In her heart of hearts, if you could put a tape in that White House, like you did with Mr. Sperling, whatever his name was, I don't remember his name. If you had a secret tape recording of Michelle Obama talking quietly, talking to anyone when no one's listening, tell me if you would hear somebody talking highly about her fellow man. I don't think so. I think you'd hear far worse than what you heard from that baseball owner. By what I hear her saying publicly, I would say that you'd be shocked probably if you could hear what Al Sharpton says in private. That's a guess. And they're entitled to their opinion. They're entitled to be racist if they want. There's no law against it, by the way. But when they're public figures and that's all they do, you have to ask yourself, why are they doing it? Why are they doing it? Why are they trying to stir up such racial enmity and hatred in the country? We always knew that the Democrats were the party of economic warfare, class warfare, race warfare. And they're at it now at a way I never thought I'd see in my life. Never. And they're getting away with it. But joining the chorus is none other than one of the wealthiest Europeans in the country, European-American Nancy Pelosi. Nancy Pelosi, of all people, should not do this. She has grandchildren. Does she want people to disrupt her life at her house on Pacific Heights? I would hope not. I don't think she wants a mob outside, screaming outside her windows. Now, why is she telling these idiots at Berkeley to go out and be disruptors? You know that she hates disruptors who would say one word to her about her. She wants you to disrupt, too. Who exactly does Mrs. Pelosi want to disrupt what? Why they invited this nut bar, this hairball? She's like a human hairball. Why would they invite this babbling fool to speak at my alma mater? I'll never understand.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now. 855-400-SAVAGE. 855-400-7282. Savage.
We continue to salute our veterans on Memorial Day with the Savage Nation. See, if this woman had a reality show, A Day in the Life of Nancy Pelosi, the biggest viewership in history, make the Kardashians look like beginners. To see that woman from the morning, from the minute she gets out of bed, wow. When she speaks, people are entertained. All that fluid coming out of the mouth, sucking candies. Families of two Benghazi victims don't want more investigations. It's a stunt. But people are tired of Benghazi. Okay, Neil, let's play clip three, and we'll have the reality show called Pelosi Incorporated in clip three.
The American people care about jobs. They care about their families and their education of their children and the health of their families and that. As somebody said to me yesterday, either people have gotten tired of Benghazi or they never knew about it in the first place.
That's no reason not to investigate who let them die, Nancy. You're a public servant. Doesn't matter what the morons think. But even people. What do you care about the people? You're an elitist, a part of the New World Order. You don't care about the people. We need the people. What do they know? The people don't know how to wash their own teeth. They have to be told how to wash their own teeth in the morning. The people. So now let's listen next in the reality show called A Day in the Life of Nancy Pelosi, clip four.
So let's not be accomplices to this diversionary tactic. It's all subterfuge because they don't want to talk about what our responsibilities are here.
Well, Miss Pelosi, one of your responsibilities is to explain how an ambassador got killed. That's one of your responsibilities, to explain who gave the orders to the military to stand down. That's as important as teaching people how to brush their teeth. And listen to number five now.
The speaker says he doesn't want it to go that place. I hope that he, that's how it will go. And when I speak with him, what? We'll see. But again, we've been there, done that. Why are we doing this again?
Because it's a
cover-up. Why are we doing this again?
Because it's a cover-up, Nancy. Now listen to clip one and two back to back. This is too good to believe.
The fact is this is a stunt. This is a political stunt.
No, you're
and
stunted.
The fact that,
you're stunted.
ISIL just is damaged goods. They had to move from him to another venue with
You've
another
been
chairman.
Since birth.
That's what this is. We've been there, done this over and over again.
Yeah,
it's very
right.
sad.
Pasta
Chris Stevens, Glenn Doherty, Sean Smith.
Yeah, right.
Tyrone Woods.
Yeah, you know their names.
Two of their families have called us and said, please don't take us down this path again.
Name them.
It's really hard for them. It's very sad.
She's crying for the victims of Benghazi, but she doesn't want to investigate why they died. It's interesting. She knows their names, Stevens, Doherty, Smith, Woods. And she knows their names, but it's not important to find out why they died. Why? Who gave the thumbs down order on the military to rescue them? That's fine. Really odd. Really odd. Really, really odd. Really odd. This story just caught my eye. I can't believe it, but I'll read it to you on the Savage Nation. Welcome to hour number three, by the way. U.S. will circumcise 150,000 to 200,000 in Swaziland. I'm not making it up yet. Saturday Night Live, no. Savage Night Live, no. U.S. will circumcise 150,000 to 200,000 in Swaziland. The United States Agency for International Development is planning to spend $24 million to circumcise an estimated 150,000 to 200,000 male infants and males aged 10 to 49 in the Kingdom of Swaziland. Because the Kingdom of Swaziland has the highest rates of HIV in the world, accounting for 31% HIV prevalence. My gut solves the grand set. And apparently by circumcising the Swazis in Swaziland, they believe that they will reduce the rate of HIV. The overall goal of this new project, they say, is to increase the uptake of male circumcision services among all eligible males aged 10 to 49 in Swaziland and male infants, the grant announcement said. Interventions will contribute to the achievement of the following national outcomes. Increasing the proportion of males aged 10 to 49 who are circumcised from 19% in 2010 to 45% in 2015, blah, 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 blah. An estimated 150,000 to 100,000 males will be circumcised for the project, contributing to 65% coverage by 2018. Now, why does USAID believe that circumcision per se will reduce the rate of HIV? I'm bewildered by this. Why would you circumcise an entire population like this on the supposition that it will reduce the rate of HIV? I don't get it. Wouldn't some other interventions reduce the risk of HIV, such as cautioning the population about unprotected sex, about risky sexual behaviors? Wouldn't that be equally or more important than circumcision? I can't imagine what people are thinking walking around in other cities. It's like when you leave your radio studio, you go out into the real world, say, what do they care? I don't know. Look at people, you get bewildered by it. Walking, ice cream in the mouth, pizza, hot dog, a green snack, no snack, anorexics, fatzos, nutcases, dirty people, clean people, bicycle riders everywhere, peddlers, no peddlers, panhandlers, hand paddlers, and wherever you go, and you can get bewildered by it. That's why I stay in my own monastery of the radio studio. I'm in a monastery. I'm basically a monastic talk show host. Rarely I jump over the wall. I do. I occasionally jump the wall. I admit it. But by and large, I'm in the monastery of my own mind. So forgive me if I'm not relating to your world. Okay, here we go again. The reverse now propaganda starts to come out. I just released poll shows Democrats tied with the leading Republicans in key red state Senate races, boosting morale on the left, but it's a bit early for election forecasting models to pay much heed. That's according to an NBC Marxist poll of key red states. NBC Marxist poll. They call it Marist. I call it Marxist. All these polls are such frauds. It's unbelievable. It's all propaganda. NBC. And same people who brought you Al Sharpton did a very fair objective poll. Those who gave you Al Sharpton are telling you what to think. The survey put out by the NBC Marxist poll shows Democrat candidates even with blah, blah, blah. I don't pay attention to polls. Then you look at the bottom, because I know math. I have a PhD, which includes a portion in epidemiology. They don't even tell you how many they're looking at anymore. They don't even give you the poll numbers. They don't even show you what number of people were looked at with a plus or minus anymore. They just make the whole thing up and say, poll. One stone drug addict who didn't go to a party last night did a poll in his toilet last night for NBC and the Marxists. And they go, oh, Republicans might win, right. Who knows what's going to win? I know the Republicans are likely to lose because they're going to alienate. If they grant amnesty in August, it's over. I wouldn't vote for them. That's the end. They vote for amnesty, I'm not voting at all. I won't vote. Russians bad, Ukrainians good. Ukrainian fascists still good. It's like rebels in Syria, still good, even though they're Al-Qaeda and they hate America. We're sending them arms, and McCain wants us to arm them. McCain wants us to arm Eastern Ukraine, even though most of them are fascists who are doing these things. That's all. Ukrainian separatist leader says, look in the union with Russia. That's Western Ukraine. There was a vote which you wouldn't know about. Did you know that? There was a vote, actually, in Donetsk. Donetsk! Donetsk! I won't tell. Anger, confusion in Donetsk after rebel vote. They're calling them rebels now, the Associated Press, another communist outlet. I have all new websites that I go to now. I've been searching for new web. You know what I'm watching in news over the weekend? I can't stop watching RU, Russian news. I turned off every other channel. I won't watch Fox anymore. I'm so tired of it. It's so predictable. Some of them do a good job. Brett Baer did a nice job on the NSA spying the other night. The others are boring, like the girls. I mean, how many times do I have to say leg crosses? Big deal. Oh, look, she has lipstick and legs. Look at that. Oh, how wonderful. Makes us smart. Well, the five idiots sit around with the five. Ugh. One joke after another. Not funny. The act is over already. You know what I mean? They'd be thrown out of the lounge in Las Vegas if they were doing that act over and over again. Same day, the five of them with that fat slob, the Democrat. So I watch Russian news now. I don't know. It's refreshingly intelligent. Doesn't mean I have to agree with their propaganda viewpoint, but doesn't mean I have to agree with CNN's propaganda viewpoint, do I? Intellectually appealing, Russian news. So different, the education level. So different than what we have in this country. There's zero education. Society of Professional Journalists. No such thing. It's an oxymoron. Professional and journalist in the same sentence. That's like saying honest politician in San Francisco. Society of Honest Politicians in San Francisco. There was a meeting. No one showed up. Let's see what I got on the website here. I'm not interested in this either. Nanny State of the Week. Failure of Maryland Obamacare exchange, not interested. Welfare fraud, I don't care, because they're not going to stop it. President Obama speaks to, whatever, you get the picture. There's nothing interesting. Medicare fraud, $97 million for mentally ill patients to watch movies and play games. They must be talking about Congress, right? Medicare fraud, $97 million for mentally ill patients to watch movies and play games. Sounds like Congress. Mentally ill patients watching movies and playing games. Congress. Can't say that. You can't talk about it. Fleet of Obama choppers to cost $20 billion. You hear this? He's building himself new choppers. Front teeth. That's helicopters. Cost $20 billion. I mean, for teeth, it would be a lot of money. President Obama has ordered a fleet of 23 presidential helicopters that will cost taxpayers $20 billion. Although the program won't deliver the Obama choppers until 2020, typical military-industrial complex delays, they were named after the president because he ordered them and also was a no-bid contract. $20 billion while cutting the military to the bone. And the Osprey, I'm sure, is being polished right now to bring Bo the dog to Martha's Vineyard this summer. He flies in Air Force One. She flies in Air Force Two. The dog doesn't fly with them, which I don't understand. That worries me. That's got a connotation I don't like. And they flew the dog on an Osprey helicopter to Martha's Vineyard last summer. Unbelievable. I'll be right back. It's the Savage Nation.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Obama is not the sun and the moon and the stars. Now, Congress is not the sun, the moon, and the stars. There's a bigger world out there than these liars in skirts and suits. I mean, it's hard to ignore what they're doing to us, wrecking a nation, wrecking a healthcare system, wrecking one system after another, destroying the military, destroying the schools, destroying the churches. It's hard to ignore it, but occasionally there's another topic, you know, here and there. When I was a boy, my favorite part of the circus was the freak show. You can't call it that. I understand. I'm talking about history in context. They called it a freak show. You went downstairs. You saw the one-breasted man with a beard. They scared me as a child. Children are afraid of anomalies like that. They are. I remember when a midget once touched me outside Madison Square Garden. I screamed. I got lost in the crowd. I was coming out. I don't know how. A huge crowd after a circus. And I thought my mother was next to me. And I reached over. I must have been five. And I said, Ma, and I touched. And it was not my mother's hand, but a midget. I got scared. I screamed. I thought it was catching. Who knows? You know, I didn't say I still think that. I'm giving you a child's view and why children are interested in odd people, odd things, and how the world is so different today. That's all. I used to go to Coney Island, and now that I'm reminiscing, to the Wax Museum, and I used to like to go into the dioramas of the murderers. Oh, that was frightening. You know, I remember there was like George Metesky, the Mad Bomber. And whoever the wax guys were really frighteningly close to the pictures in the Daily News at the time. George Metesky makes a bomb as he's about to put it on a subway car. You know, as a child's fascinating. 11 years old, you ride the subway all the way out. Took hours to go from Queens to far. I don't know where it was. Coney Island and Rockaway, I think. I don't even remember. And we'd have to go through the Wildings gangs, resist getting killed on a subway car. Even then, if you were a different race, they try to beat you up on the subway. You had to defend yourself on the way to Coney Island. And it went on. I mean, it didn't just start. And then you get there, and you go in the Wax Museum, and then there was this chicken farmer guy scared everyone in New York. I forget his name, but he used to, like, dismember people. He was a chicken. He, like, worked on a chicken farm in New Jersey. He scared the heck out of me. They showed him so realistically. I have nightmares to this day. They showed him like a demon inside his room, like blood all over his face with people's bodies underneath the bed, a leg sticking out as the police go in there. You know, to a child, it's real. This was before video. This was before, you know, just like plastic, like made of wax, the Wax Museum. But that was then. This is now. It's a different universe. And then it ties in a way to the rich childhood I had with my father selling antiques. I don't mean $1 billion. I mean 100 million. I don't mean stuff that the Russian oligarchs who stole a nation would buy. Not that kind of antiques. I mean, he sold, you know, art stuff from the last century before to the bourgeois nouveau riche, whatever, who wanted a nice lamp made out of a bronze, whatever, a clock, this or that, a statue or this or that, jewelry. And we would deliver it. all over New York, out to the island, this and that. You know, people would buy it. I go to Riverhead to some rich man's estate. Rich man. The rich man lives in Riverhead. Ooh, the rich man. He was like somehow better than us. I felt dirty going in the rich man's house. I was the immigrant's son, delivery boy. I always felt like poor and filthy. Like I was from a Dickens novel, going in like the rich man's house. Like you had it in like Cowtown. Yes, sir. You know, like that. You wouldn't expect this from a white boy, would you, to talk like this? I'm telling you how it was, why I can relate to people. And then there was the one-breasted circus performer who liked antiques. I told you about him. Out in Long Beach. He lived in a little house in Long Beach. He liked to collect statues, beautiful statues, mainly of angels and figurines of that type. And I told you, we went in that house. It was like out of The Godfather in Long Beach. And you'd knock on the door, and I knew it. And my father would say, don't laugh at him now. No one could laugh at him. He said he works in the circus. He is a man with one breast, but he is a man. You know, like a beard, half a beard and a breast. No, I wouldn't laugh at him at 11. How could I? That's easy to figure out. Today you go to Harvard, half the people look like that. But then that was an anomaly. At Harvard, they have the satanic mass run by them. But the thing is, I didn't laugh at him. I was afraid of him. Again, kids are afraid of those things. So, nope, they're like, knock, knock, delivery. And he would open a crack. You couldn't even open it to get in. Because he had merchandise, like all the statues that he bought over the years from my father and others, all over the house. Not displayed properly on pedestals or put properly on the wall. They were just jammed in there like a warehouse. He would buy them obsessively, OCD on statues. So as I got older, I look back on that, on the freak, and I think, why would he? And it's because he felt, you know, like there was something wrong with him, like he wasn't right. So he bought odd objects of beauty to try to compensate for his feelings of, you know, non-beauty, whatever. Not that profound, but for a kid, interesting. Putting two and two together on his own. Couldn't read about it. Didn't learn it in school. Learned it on the street. Learned it from Life 101. So is there any wonder you like the show? Who talks like this in this world? Who is left who knows the real world but me?
Savage.